The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Something else we did talk about earlier in the show during the afternoon update was this revelation that there are only 3 hospital beds in the country, acute hospital beds for adults with eating disorders, despite a promise for an expansion way back in 2018 when a certain Simon Harris was Minister for Health. We're going to be talking to some people working in this field in a few minutes about what should be done, what could be done, what needs to be done in the future. But before that, Lauren is with me. Lauren is 20 years old and she lives in Dublin. Lauren, you're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder. Can you tell us a little bit about your own experience? When did your eating disorder start?
So I struggled with food as a teenager, but I never sought treatment or even support from the GP until things got a bit worse when I was 17. And I was advised to go to the emergency department. So I spent 2 months in a general hospital after I had visited the GP. And the hope was that I would make it to CAMHS in an inpatient unit to seek treatment there. But there's physical criteria to be in a CAMHS unit. So I only reached that criteria 1 week or 7 days before my 18th birthday. So then, unfortunately, on my 18th birthday that morning, I had to be discharged with no planning really of where I would be going from there. So I think just that gap was definitely tricky between children and adult services.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the paucity of adult services in a moment, but I'm just interested in this issue with CAMHS as well. So you were referred to CAMHS, but what, you were told that because your body weight was too low, you couldn't access the services, was it?
Yes, exactly.
So you're too malnourished to get the psychiatric help, go off and deal with that problem, but obviously you can't deal with that problem until you get the psychiatric help.
That's it, exactly, yes. So there's physical treatment in a general hospital, but although there is a psychiatric team, there's not the level of support that's required, especially when you're in a really difficult place, I feel.
Well, it kind of feels a little like policy there, health policy, ignores the reality of the psychiatric condition, doesn't it? Like, as
definitely.
In go off and sort your malnourishment and then we'll deal with the psychiatric stuff.
Completely, and they're hand in hand, one affects the other. But to be in a place where you're physically so unwell that they won't accept you is really scary, and the fact that what you really need is that mental health support to be able to get to a better place. It just feels they're treated quite separately, to be honest, yeah.
So tell me then about your experience with adult services. So you would have qualified for access to CAMHS, but as you say, this is the week before your 18th birthday, so suddenly you're kind of spewed out into the adult system, as it were. What happens?
So there's 3 public eating disorder beds available in St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin. But as I don't live in the catchment area, I wouldn't have been eligible to go there, basically. So I had a community team while I was still at home, but they didn't have any specialised services either. So I was privately seeing a dietitian, which I was very lucky to be in the position to have that support, but from the community team there wasn't really any support, to be honest.
And where did that leave you then, Lauren?
So I physically declined again, basically, and I had to go back to the same general hospital for another 3 months while I was under the adult team, pretty much. So, yeah, there was not much of a plan once I had left CAMHS, and I wasn't able to manage on my own in the community. So I had to go back to General Hospital again then.
And how long did that kind of yo-yoing go on for between kind of attempts to deal with it in the community and hospitalisation?
It was definitely over a year from when I first went into hospital to coming home again and then going back in. And then luckily I was able to receive private inpatient treatment, but many aren't in the position to access that treatment, which is very unfortunate. So I was lucky to receive that, but it was still very disjointed when I would be discharged there. I was in and out a few times, and the community team, again, there wasn't much support.
Where do you think you'd be, Lauren, without that private support?
Honestly, in a very, very bad place, or possibly not around, because that really was the difference in me having a chance to kind of work through recovery and work on getting myself to a better place. But without it, I don't think it would be very good right now. Yeah.
And how are you today, Lauren?
I'm doing okay. Yes, I've been referred again now. There is an eating disorder team with the community team, but they've now said that there's physical criteria again, and they're not sure that I'll be ill enough, basically, to receive that help. So it's gone from being too malnourished to not be able to receive help to now being, oh, you're doing okay physically, so I may not be eligible to receive help from them as well now.
So despite, like, quite possibly the same kind of underlying psychiatric issues being there,
yes,
again, it kind of comes back to the BMI thing. You know, your BMI is too low, we're not helping you. Well, your BMI is high enough now, we're not helping you.
Exactly, yes, that's the way it is, yeah.
Oh, Lauren, listen, I'm so sorry to hear the situation you find yourself in. I think lots of people will feel likewise. But thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
We wish you well. And I know we spoke a few months ago, and I hope we speak again soon and you're in a better place. Maybe that is just Lauren's experience of the system in this country. We're going to be talking about how the system might be improved, what should and could and needs to happen in that regard with people who know that system intimately after this quick break. Here to talk about the system and how it works and how it might be improved, Dr. Art Malone, co-chair of the Eating Disorder Special Interest Group in the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland and a consultant psychiatrist with the HSE Eating Disorder Service in St. Vincent's University Hospital, and Harriet Parsons, the psychotherapist and training and development manager at Bodywise.ie. You are both very, very welcome to studio, and thanks a million for taking the time. Harriet, I know you were listening to Lauren. I mean, her experience, how common or otherwise is it?
Very common, very common. It's a story that I've heard so many times. I suppose I've been working in Bodywise nearly 19 years, and it's a story that I've heard over and over again. People getting caught between the CAMS and the transition to adult services, the BMI issue, you know, someone not being sick enough or being well enough. It's something that we hear over and over again.
And has there been improvement in that system over the last number of years?
Yeah, there has been improvement. I mean, it certainly is a better system than it was when I started working in Bodywise. I suppose significantly in 2018, the HSC, you know, decided that eating disorder services within the country needed a national clinical program. And that was really to provide consistency of care nationally. So we wouldn't be in this situation where, like Lauren said, she wasn't in the catchment area to be admitted to a public eating disorder bed. And so, you know, there have been problems with the clinical program in terms of, you know, consistent funding. And when that doesn't happen, things don't move quickly and things stall and not all the developments have happened. However, there are, you know, new specialist eating disorder teams in place. There are 11 of them now. And so, unfortunately, it's still the same situation that if you're in the catchment area for one of those specialist teams, you now have the specialist team. It's still a situation that if you're not in the catchment area, you don't necessarily have access to that team.
So that's one of the shortcomings then in the system, is that it's kind of maybe a patchwork of care depending on where you happen to be, the kind of the geographical lottery.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose to speak to our service in St. Vincent's, we have sort of an integrated service, and we are very focused on transitions. As Lauren said, she felt very much dropped and lost in between services. We have very close collaboration with the child and adolescent services in our area, and we have specifically come up with sort of a joint plan with them that anyone who is moving between services, we get clear notification in advance. We reach out in advance. We encourage people to prepare a transition document before they come over to us, so they know, we know if, how much they want their parents involved, anything that we need to know about how they're communicated with. Mm-hmm. And then we get a very close handover from the CAMHS team. So I suppose that's the model of what things should look like. But I agree with Harriet's conclusion there that it's not present everywhere. Mm. And then the other difference in our service is that we provide cover to the emergency department and the acute hospital in St. Vincent's. So if someone's in a medical emergency, we know about it. And if someone's then leaving hospital, we know about it and we're able to support them to do that. But again, not available everywhere.
What stops that system being available everywhere? I mean, is it just kind of a restructuring piece? Is it a management piece? Are there resources that are needed in order to get a system like that up and running that maybe don't exist yet?
Well, it's not restructuring because there was no structure to begin with.
Okay.
Going back to 2018, you're talking about one team in the country. So it's building from literally the ground up. And it's not just a matter of releasing funding. Even if you had all the money available, you wouldn't have necessarily people with the relevant skills, relevant interest in doing it. So it's a very big project to build out 18 teams from zero. And that's what is happening at the moment. It's disappointing how there have been some stalls along the way, but it's a very, very big undertaking for that to happen nationwide.
And Harriet, in parts of the country, like say where ART is working, where you do have that team having been built out and you've got those systems in place, mm-hmm. how transformative is that in terms of the experience of someone like Lauren, people going through the system?
Well, it's a completely different type of experience. So what we have learned from the developments where they have happened is that when that system is in place, it works really well. You know, as Art says there, he's, you know, it shouldn't be difficult to manage a transition from CAMHS to AMHS. That shouldn't be, you know, an impossible task. It takes somebody sitting down and thinking about how it's going to happen. And so what we know from the stats that have been gathered is that where there are the specialist teams in place, people are identified earlier, they're referred quicker, they're assessed quicker, they're treated, and they're discharged quicker. And we know that it works. So we want it to be able to work nationally. And I suppose Bodywise's role in the whole thing is to provide a support component to all of that. So what we've found is that by supporting, say, the families of people who are engaged in services, we're supporting the treatment service as well. And clinicians have told us that where the family have engaged with, you know, the family support package that we offer, you know, those families come prepared far better. They know what they're going to be asked to do. They understand how to do it. So one mum said, CAMHS told us what to do and Bodywise showed us how to do it. So we have this very good relationship that works. So when it works well, it works very well.
Can you give us a sense of the strain that services are under in terms of numbers and how many people are kind of presenting compared to times gone by? I mean, is it getting busier and busier?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Art will speak to that. The increase during COVID, it was, I think at one stage it was doubling up on people coming in.
Art?
Yeah, well, I guess, there's a few things from, again, the model of care was written over the course of 2016, 2017, published in 2018. So the kind of the demand in terms of catchment area population has gone up irrespective of COVID.
Mm.
The COVID presentations were through the roof in terms of number and in terms of severity. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but like we at the moment are just about keeping up with our current referrals, but we're still carrying referrals from that big spike over that 3-year period. So our wait list is about, 8 months or so down from over 12 months. So we're working through it.
Has the rate of referral gone back, say, post 2022, 2023 to the pre-COVID levels, or has it settled at a higher rate?
It's about 20% higher than it was before COVID, and it was about double during COVID.
Okay. So there is kind of ever-increasing pressure on a system. I guess what I'm getting at is there's a similarity here, is there kind of with you know, with kind of shortcomings in the housing stock, you're kind of, not only are you trying to build houses for the people who would want them this year, you're kind of playing catch up with all the people who would have wanted it last year and the year before and the year before. There's an element to that here, is there?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the inpatient beds available and, you know, the 23 that were promised, the 3 that were delivered, that 23 probably needs to be higher if the model of care is going to be reconsidered. And I guess that's a problem for another day. But like, it's definitely something that as the teams come online, you don't want them in a position where they say, this person is too sick for me to accept them into my specialist service. They need to have somewhere where someone who is really sick can be managed. And often that's an inpatient bed only, which is not the goal for most people, which is recover at home, recover in
your environment.
And what's
the delay, as you understand it, in the number of beds, those inpatient beds expanding? Because we have, in fairness, you know, those 16 kind of hubs, we've had 11 of them, and there's the promise of 5 remaining kind of on the way. So there, and Harriet's right, there has been progress, like there's tangible progress, but that figure is kind of the exact same as it was in 2018, 3 of those beds.
I think it's a very complex multi-factor problem. Like, where are they going to go? Where are those beds going to go? The kind of, everywhere I've ever worked, the Department of Psychiatry is always oversubscribed. There's fewer beds than are needed, and you can't just take away beds from them to give to eating disorders. You're talking about building new, essentially new buildings, training new staff, and that's a huge undertaking. And I think you're going to need a very kind of secure sort of development of outpatient teams to be able to support that. And at the moment, it's kind of, that is the focus, get the outpatient beds or the outpatient teams up and running. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the plan is going to be for how to finalize getting more inpatient beds, but it's a big capital investment and a big training investment in making them available.
In terms of those various shortcomings, Harry, what's kind of the top of your priority list in that regard? I mean, is it an expansion of those inpatient beds? Is it an improvement of outpatient facilities? Is it getting the systems that kind of ART is working within there at Vincent's kind of more universal across the country as an experience? But I know it's all of the above to a degree, but what's number
one
on the list?
It's all a priority. And I think that probably the CAM services have had a lot of input. And I think that the adult services are a little bit behind that. And especially in terms of beds, the adult services are way behind. In terms of CAMs inpatient, where there can be nasogastric feeding, there are, you know, 2 specialist places that are linked with a CAM service. And that's not available for adults. So, yeah, I mean, I think the beds is a huge issue. I think access to care is a huge issue. I think if there was more resources, we wouldn't have to have that BMI cut off, and you wouldn't have to have, you know, someone being stuck in Lauren's position, because she would be taken in and she would be seen regardless of what her physical state is. Because we have to remember that, yes, an eating disorder affects somebody physically. The other parts are equally as important, the psychological and the emotional aspects.
Well, listen, Harriet, thank you again for joining us in studio. Harriet Parsons, who's a psychotherapist, training and development manager at bodywise.ie, and Dr. Art Malone, co-chair of the Eating Disorder Special Interest Group in the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland and consultant psychiatrist with the HSE Eating Disorder Service in St. Vincent's University Hospital. Art, thank you. As well, and thank you to Lauren again, who shared her story with us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.